Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Round one has come and gone, and we are ready to panic and throw our teams out the window. But just before you do that, we're going to talk you through and maybe talk you off the ledge a little bit. It's time for the ball, boys. Let's go!
Just done it from nowhere.
G'day and welcome to the Ball Boys AFL Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Mitch Casey, and you can find me on Twitter at Ball Boys Fantasy. And I am grieving for the loss of my fantasy team. And I'm also joined by my co-host, Luke Rodson. How are you, mate?
Is it round 24 already? I'm done.
Feels a bit that way.
Take me out the back.
So,
turn me into glue. Do something with me.
We've spent weeks, months agonizing, preparing, strategizing, and fixating on our AFL fantasy sides. Surely we've got some good news and good results to show for it, right? Right?
Well, this is the problem, right? Is mostly good, but one man managed to just undo everything that was good about the world in one foul swoop. And we'll get to him in a bit, but for me, it was just very dire for the Oxlongs. At score of 20-33, which is well off the pace, and it reflects in my greater than 30K ranking.
Well,
I reckon there's people that tune in a week ago, pick a team, and they are almost 100%.
I'm sure a lot of people copied the Traders Vanilla team and 10,000 spots ahead.
I wish I had.
Yes, 100%.
That's what I'll do next year if I play.
I want to, just before we start the podcast, give a mighty congratulations to Lucas, coach of Pubfeed and Sauce, Pubfeed with Sauce, as the winner of 2025 AFL Fantasy for, you know, winning the entire competition in round one. No, but honestly, just let's all take a step back, guys. It's week one. I, too, have had a shit score. I only pipped you by 4 points. And yes, I am ranked 32,140. And no, it's not a good start. Would I have preferred to not start there? Yes. But it literally, at this point of the season, means the closest bit next to nothing as it could. Last year, I actually went back and listened to our old podcast, week one last year. And you know, we weren't too up and about then either. But I was 23,000 after round one. After round two, I was about 7,000. After round three, I was about 3,000. So things can change very quickly. And we all know that I won this bad boy, this number 16 on my head. So please keep listening to the show. We aren't terrible fantasy coaches.
He's ranked 32K and he's found a way to reference his 16 out. Well played.
Don't leave us. We're not terrible. But in all seriousness, it is a marathon. The AFL Fantasy Marathon starts now, Luke, and we are going to be the butter mice.
Okay, I like it.
We're going to churn this butter into cream.
We'll hike the comeback trail. You know, I, of course, am a little bummed, but when I saw the run sheet and realized that we're back into some of our favorite segments, it did get me up and about. So, should we talk about perhaps the camel and sponge of the week?
Yeah, first up? let's give it up. Do you want to start positive or negative? Where do you want to go?
Positive, mate. Let's start with the positive.
Right. Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he?
It's just slightly long, that sound grab.
Yeah, but it's good. We want to revel in it. Bailey Smith. I'm giving the sponge of the week to Bailey Smith.
What is the sponge for perhaps new people that
are listening? For people who are not familiar with the sponge, well, it's a bit of a long-winded way to get here, but there once was a guy called Dossie, and he described people who want the pill as thirsty gangsters, basically. People who have observable thirst. And do you know, fun fact, what the most thirsty creature in the world is? It's a sea sponge.
Hey, sounds like one you didn't have to Google.
No, I never knew it off the top of my head. So, hence, the sponge of the week is the thirstiest, most, you know, the person who was looking for the pill against reckless abandon and just wanted nothing but fantasy points. And
boy,
so
that is
Bailey Smith. He was thirsty as anything. He wanted to prove himself. His kicking wasn't anything special, but he was relentless in trying to tackle, trying to get the ball, trying to collect marks. He got a 50-meter penalty, and someone was there trying to ask for the ball to kick a goal. He said, "No, I'm going to kick this goal and score an extra 6 points for my coaches." So to me, a 126 after there was some doubts. No preseason game for him. No, he just waltzes in there. A lazy 126 price at 58, more than doubles his price out figure. And to me, that is thirst.
On the opposite end of the spectrum.
Here we go.
Get your chest into it. On the opposite end of the spectrum, the camel is quenched.
You know, camels and llamas, they're pretty... They're all the same family.
They're no kangaroo rat. That's actually the most quenched animal. Mitch wouldn't let me use it. Look, you mentioned llama. This man single-handedly reached into my mouth... to his elbow,
where's this going?
Pulled my heart out of my mouth and just stomped all over it. This guy was fucking useless.
Yeah.
Useless as an ashtray on a motorbike. Imagine that.
Pretty useless.
That's very, very useless. And Tim English was a shell of himself. I can't believe that I've been fooled into picking him.
I can't believe you talked me into him, man.
Yeah, it was horrible of me. In hindsight, what was I doing? You picked two speculative ruckmen. It was a stupid pick, and it showed all we needed him to do was go somewhere close to Sherry in the first round, given that we're hoping that the matchups get harder. He didn't, and it cost me close to 100 points.
He was basically 60 points off Tristan Sherry when they were priced 10 points difference. So we've lost 50 points based on that one decision. And we obviously would have captained either the other options in Max Gorn in or Tristan Sherry, so we've lost points there as well. So yeah, and that's the thing. So this is English's second lowest score in the last 2 years. He only had one score last season that was worse than this, and that was against Essendon. Last time he versed North Melbourne, he scored a 95. So you could say, oh, he's gone up against Tristan Sherry, like you should have expected this, but. Well, no, last time he versus Sherry, he put up a 95. And it wasn't just, like you said, the score sucks, but his quenchedness, he looked like he was running around in sand out there.
And it was probably exemplified when there was one effort where I saw, it looked like a gazelle just sprinting across the park. I thought, wow, this who's running so hard for this plus six? It was Tim English. I thought...
Where was this?
That one effort showed me what he's capable of. The rest of it was dog shit. So we won't talk too much about it because obviously no other idiots picked him.
Yeah,
so
he's
it's not
super
worth
highly
spending
owned,
time
so.
On. But what I do want to spend some time on is Boggs and Flogs.
And the winner of the Norm Smith medal.
You're an embarrassment to what you do, mate. You're an embarrassment.
One of my favourite segments of all time, this one here. So we'll go through each of the game, basically highlighting the best player on ground, but also some flogs in the game. Not always limited to the players. Sometimes we branch out a little bit, but we'll start with the first game, Richmond versus Carlton. You know, we could say Richmond's the best on ground. Dusty Jr. was best on ground from a footy standpoint, but I'm going to give, for a fantasy point of view, Tom De Koning as the best on ground, 132. And I think he is set for a big, big season. Was my VC, decided not to use it. But nonetheless, I think he is a massive, massive must-have for those of you who maybe missed out on him.
Imagine he'd flopped, I wouldn't be here. Now, speaking of flopping, actually, the flog in this one is Sam Lawler's undies.
Mm.
So I don't know if everyone has seen perhaps a video getting around in some group chats on the social media, but...
Poor guy.
Yeah, he's just kicked... Was it his first goal, or was it...
I think it was after the first one.
The first goal, given it the big...
scarily like Dusty, by the way.
Oh, it was. And what a weapon. How good was Richmond? But Sam Lawler's undies, just the elastic, was just getting a little bit loose on them. And we saw more than we were hoping for.
He's taking it like a champ with a few Instagram posts. So, yeah.
Legend.
Hopefully. Bonds will do the deal. Not too embarrassed. Let's go into Hawthorn versus Essendon. Best on ground, Jai Caldwell, who put up the biggest round of the biggest score of the entire round. I think he went 140 plus. Showed, you know, the underpriced value of his starting price. And we talked about him being a potential value option, but we didn't see the round zero score. It also, he had some interruptions this preseason, so we were never seriously considering him, but I'm glad he was on my draft team and is posing some difficult questions with their buy still coming up. But price in the 90s with the highest score of the round, you have to absolutely take note of that. So who gets the flog for this one, Luke?
Dylan Shield was a guy that promised a little bit in the preseason in a juicy roll off halfback. But once the heat was on in this game, and Hawthorn bring some serious heat, he was bad from a fantasy perspective, but there were some missed targets in there that I think will show up in the game review.
Do you think he stays in that role for long?
It's tough. If there's more games like that on the horizon, then the answer is probably no. But regardless of the fact, he scored a 78. He's going to have less price increases in playing for Essendon. So Dylan Scheel, unfortunately, you got the flog in this one.
Yep, Geelong versus Fremantle. I gave the sponge to another Geelong player. So I'm going to give it to Sam De Koning, also because for those who had him, he wasn't as ubiquitous as Bailey Smith. So he gets the best on ground for that performance. 124. I knew this was going to be a good matchup, but I didn't expect this type of a score. Kicked a goal, was getting involved in the chip-to-chip as well. Just looked great.
Should have just given a collective bog to Mr. and Mrs. De Koning for...
Yeah, true. For the De Konings, farewell.
For procreating and giving us two great fantasy options. The flog is Lloyd Meek. I think you might have picked this one. You did us dirty with the ruck that we actually selected, but Lloyd Meek, you said, was perhaps all show in the preseason, and unfortunately, if you went there, it would have been a hard watch.
Yeah, a bit of an immediate... return back to earth for him. Sydney versus Brisbane, best on ground. I'm giving it to Will Ashcroft. This was a low scoring game.
Will or Levi?
Sorry, I meant Levi. I wrote Will. No, the good one, Levi.
Will Ashcroft owners will be unhappy with
you. No, they will be unhappy. But no, Levi Ashcroft, the good Ashcroft, he scored an 84 after we all thought he was going to be the sub, some of us thought he was the sub. Some of us Nostradamuses over here predicted he would not actually indeed be the sub. But he, in a low-scoring game, put up an 84. So I think he was right up there, maybe top five in Brisbane scorers, playing purely off the forward and a little bit of wing time. So no CBAs. He just got it done the old hard way.
I'm glad I'm good at picking things that are just completely irrelevant and don't really matter for my score. So,
well, it mattered for us.
It slightly mattered. My flog here is Charlie Cameron. He was the late out, and it just put people in a position where they just
flog
had to...
for those who missed it.
And also, some people just had to manipulate their teams just in a way that they might not have wanted to, that they wouldn't have otherwise had to do.
I reckon Fagan could be the flog there as well. Why would you ever start the man in the sub anyway?
Yeah.
Don't put that on the agenda at all.
Well...
anyway,
the worst thing that could have happened is that he came on and then gave us a game that warranted him going back into the vest. I don't think he's done that.
I think surely he's missed it, and there is some injuries at Brisbane as well. Western Bulldogs versus North Melbourne. I'm giving the best on ground to Tom Pow here. Pow! Who, he might be real. His scoring might be real. 125. There was a lot of scoring for North Melbourne in this game, so... maybe one to monitor, but he could be legit. I'm still a bit on the fence here, but if you were a believer, first game in, you are taking your victory lap at the moment.
Tim English is the flog.
And a deserving one at that. Collingwood versus Port Adelaide, best on ground. I'm giving it to Connor Rosie. When you get absolutely flogged and you still put up 112, to me that's best on ground worthy. And for some people who had the captaincy on him, you can't really complain with a 112 starting captaincy in round one. So he gets the blog for that one in a flogging. Speaking of floggings.
I'm angry at Tim English, but this is verging on very annoying as well, because you pick a guy, Harry Perryman, that you really haven't considered putting in your team all preseason because he comes out, gives you a decent round zero score, and you get on it, okay, there's going to be some cash to generate. Not only does he give you a shit score, but he actually ends up
going down
in cash after you've picked him. So this is more fool me, perhaps. It wasn't a guy that I was looking on, but I got caught in the wave of his round zero score, and I'm going to pay the price.
Not the person I was expecting to be the early favourite for must trade out in round one, to be honest. So, yeah, interesting one there. Adelaide versus St Kilda, best on ground, similar sort of logic to the Connor Rosie one. In an absolute trouncing, Nazir Wenkenny-Miller put up a 110-plus score, and it looks like everything is going to go through him this season.
Wang was the bog in this game, and Wang was the flog in the Richmond game.
Yes, he was. Yes, very, very, very true. So I'm giving him the best on ground, despite there being plenty of good Adelaide scorers. I think this bodes well for what Wang's going to do in the future.
We like to sometimes give the flog to actual Jets that just aren't in our team.
Yeah, it's our podcast. We could be a little selfish.
Jordan Dawson is infuriatingly good.
He's very, very good. Player.
There was a patch there in the game where he'd gone quiet, and I said to you, Mitch, this could be good here.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Dawson's gone a little bit quiet, and he followed up with,
I think, reverse Mosley.
It was like a handball. He got the handball back and then just decided, I'll just cruise up and I'll kick a goal from the center square.
Oh, like 70 meters out.
Don't worry about it. And then he's in the right position all the time, tackles, marks, he does it all. So Jordan Dawson, I'm the flog for not picking you.
You see his kick to handball ratio? It's absolutely ludicrous. I'm going to bring it up right now because, like I said, I was saying to you, whenever this guy touches the ball, it's not just 2 points he gets. It's 3, 4, 5, 6, 9. Like, he never just gets a little 2-point handball. It's always something else on the back of it. He had 27 disposals. Guess how many handballs there were?
3.
Exactly 3. Oh. He had 24 kicks to 3 handballs. That is outrageous.
He's good. We should have listened to Bales. We should have known better. Bales, well done, mate. Well done.
Yes.
But Ross Lyon in this one as well, because we had a sub that we were very happy with at halftime. Oh. Hasty was looking really good, and then, ironically, Ross Lyon was hasty to sub him in the third quarter.
This is inexcusable, in my opinion. I know there's some seniority that goes on at footy clubs, but when Brad Hill, at the time you make the sub, has one touch, one disposal in 2.5 quarters, and Hasty's on like 12... Why are you taking out, in a game that is absolutely gone, why are you taking out the young kid that could use that experience?
Let him go.
And not subbing out the old guy who's had one touch and not done anything to affect the game.
Maybe there's something going on behind the scenes, but it was very frustrating from our perspective, because not only did we then end up with a rookie that perhaps didn't score as much as we would have liked, but also now a potential guy that we have to move if he's going to be in the vest in the future, or if he's cashed and it's just not going to go in the right direction.
I'm holding a little bit of hope, but we'll see when teams come out. Melbourne versus GWS, I didn't want to give it to him, but Max Gorn gets the best on ground. He was very good. Expectedly good. Some people greedily were asking for more, but I think that's a pretty fucking good start to your fantasy season if you had him, and a lot of people also had him as captain. The flog for your... for the first round for this one?
Again, this one's a little bit harsh, but Lockie Ash, I know the conditions didn't suit him, but given that he was coming off a big 125. Lockie Whitfield. Yeah, there's no excuses there, is there? But Lockie Ash at least did go up a considerable amount of money, whereas Harry Perryman did not.
A bit better than Perryman, yeah. And the last game, West Coast versus Gold Coast, the most irrelevant fantasy game of all time. Best on ground to me was Noah Anderson, just for doing it on the road. 36 touches away, and they lost to West Coast in this matchup late last season when they flew over to Perth. So a bit of revenge. We all thought he was going to go off in that game. He did in this one. He did the big boys proud, so he gets the best on ground for a 117.
The flog for me is Fridge Graham. All throughout the preseason, he had a really good role, but he just didn't show the scoring potential. In this one, he decided to be a decent option and score almost a ton in a team that got pumped. This, to me, is still a trap. I still feel I obviously haven't been reading them real well recently, but Fridge is still a trap. I think that there's going to be ups and downs.
He was the highest scoring player and only player to go over 90, and only two players to go over 75. West Coast are still an extremely poor scoring side as a whole. So that does it for the Bogs and Flogs. Let's get, so now that the anger's out of there, we've cussed out a few players and coaches. We're going to talk strategy. So round one. Now, like we said at the top, you want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You want to make some reactionary trades, and the extended full lockout only makes you more upset because you can't get in there. Now that it's lifted, the question falls, what are our priorities at this time of year? So again, if you're new, maybe you're not a Patreon member, you don't have access to the blueprint, which if you aren't, go to patreon.com/ballboys and you will get our deep dive on what we're trying to do at this sort of year. But just a little bit of an overview, Luke, what are our priorities, and are you, is it challenging you to stick to that with now what you've seen?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, the situation you're kind of referring to with us is that we've got Tim English and... he seems to be a very significant issue, not only because he's hemorrhaging cash, but he's also been outscored by 60 points. But we weren't picking him for this matchup, and we weren't avoiding Sherry for this matchup either. Yes. We knew this was going to be big. We just didn't. We were hoping it wasn't big. So I guess the lesson, not just from our perspective, but for all those people who are frustrated with a sort of premium score, a guy like Will Ashcroft, who you're picking as underpriced premium, or
Tim Taranto,
these kind of guys.
Ash.
The temptation is to sideways these guys and try and get to the guy that you potentially missed. But historically, doing that has been fraught with danger because of what it costs you on the other end.
Yes, there you can probably provide examples where it does work, i.e. last year when... I can't remember which of the teams did it, whether it was first place or second. Was it Chris or was it... I can't remember his name. Anyway, second place, who came in and did the Tom Green trade. But most times, it's not advisable to be trading your premiums. It's one game. And a one-game sample size, no matter how or what game it is very dangerous. We saw, obviously, Will Dago 126 or whatever it was in round zero, followed up with a 77. We've seen the flip side. We saw someone like Nick Dacos go 60, then go mid-90s. So these things will change dramatically. So we've seen before in terms of like Rory Laird a few years ago when he came out and dropped a 60 the next game. I think he literally immediately posted a 140 in round two. So these things can change very, very quickly. So you backed your premiums in for a reason. That reason, unless it's a dramatic role change, and there might be some things that you could point to say that, like I'm looking, if you maybe got a bit cute and brought in a Rowan Marshall, that would be something that I would be panicking on, and I would trade that out because that is something that you weren't picking Rowan Marshall to play basically exclusively as a forward. You were maybe hoping to be a bit sneaky and he plays that ruck role. So if there's something like that, you can trade them out. But if they played the role that has had a shit game, most of the time there's other priorities for you to do. And our priorities is cash gen.
That's what I was going to say. It's cash gen. And typically our cash gen comes from our cheap rookies and those like cheaper end mid prices. So guys that we missed, guys like Freya, he's a little bit more expensive, but a Mitch Nevitt in the midfield looked really, really solid for Geelong. I missed a rookie in Xavier Lindsay who looked fantastic.
Max Hall's another one a few of us missed.
Yep. If you missed sort of like a Camporelli or of course a Levi Ashcroft, a Sam DeConing, some people missed. So You're looking to pivot away from one of those guys that you didn't expect to be in a role that you were obviously not hoping for to the guy that popped, and that cash generation's going to skyrocket for you.
Now, we're going to go into some of those specific players in a second, but we are also now entering best 18 rounds for three consecutive rounds.
So does that put a little asterisk on all those things?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Does that change your strategy at all when factoring in that, say, okay, maybe we're doing these rookie shuffles, may or not end up being in your best 18 anyway. Do you think that should change our mind?
Well, put it this way for me. I'll use a couple of my players and examples, and you can hopefully try and translate that to your team. So Harry Perryman obviously was stinky. His cash gen's going nowhere. His break-even's going to go up. But he's still a guy that is in a role where he's capable of scoring 100, and he's a guy that we've seen do that
before. You would expect him to still be in your best 18, yeah?
But I've got guys like Sam Taylor and like Hugo Garcia who, to me, were probably equally as concerning with low time on ground. And obviously, Sam Taylor was always just a couple of week play. Mm-hmm. But I'm still probably at this stage leaning towards trading Perryman to Freya and leaving a Garcia another week, leaving a Sam Taylor another week because of the best 18. Whereas maybe in a situation where we have best 22, I might be tempted to give Perryman another week to prioritise getting perhaps some of those underperforming rookies to the better performing ones. So that's where my head's at on a Monday. Is that influenced by best 18? Maybe.
I think it's definitely a fact we need to take into account. However, I do think that cash gen simply trumps everything. Like, I don't think we should be worrying about trying to get maximum points on the field just yet. I think we can start to rearrange our structure, but often that maybe takes a week or two for you to get the perfect structure that you're looking for. So I think if we exit the early buy rounds with a structure we're really happy with, we have all the right rookies on field at that point, and we've got no weaknesses in our team, that is the goal. But I think, look, you might be able to carry a real weak link in your squad over the next couple of weeks if it means you prioritize one of the must-haves, you know, when you sacrifice maybe leaving a dud on your D6 or your M8 or whatever it is, because that is going to get dropped off anyway. So I think that is something to consider. But I do still think at the end of the day, this is the time where our cash is going to increase the most, and we need to maximize that, because in 14 weeks' time, that's when it's going to show up, and you're not going to have that chance again, because these rookies right now are the best they're going to be all season for the most part. So I still think that is our priority. And last year we went into that best 18 in round two as well, and that's exactly what I did. I did those fix-up trades, got a who was the Geelong guy? Dempsey in. I actually left that round two trade period with like 250k left in the bank. So, and I still scored decently just because some of the players that went shit in the first round went better in the next one. So we'll see how that goes. Before we go on to some of the must-haves, structure. With now one game or one round under the belt, do you think you nailed your structure, or do you think there's maybe a better structure? I, for one, think that maybe I could have placed a little bit more trust or punted a little bit more with some more rookies on my field. Maybe I was a bit, with the knowledge of hindsight, a bit too worried about not having, especially in my midfield. Obviously, you know that, you know, someone like a Xavier Lindsay can come up and pop a 90, but your Camporellis and those sort of stuff, I probably could have had more confidence having them on field.
Yeah, like you say, hindsight is 20/20 with that kind of thing. The bit that I'm a little bit annoyed with myself for is what I mentioned before. I don't know why. I should have seen that Tim English was also a somewhat speculative ruck pick, and so having two of those was fraught with danger. But the other thing that I'm pissed off at myself about is just not considering my DPP at utility as well. Like, for example, Hastie, I thought, was a better rookie than Max Hall, and this is easy to say again with hindsight, but at least Max Hall has the mid-forward flexibility, which would now, right at this moment, leave me... He obviously scored better, so again, easy to say, but it would leave me with a little bit more flexibility in trying to trade in a Xavier Lindsay, because if I go to try to go to a Xavier Lindsay, it's Hastie gone, but I'd have to generate the cash from somewhere, because they're more than 100k apart, or I'm ditching a Finn Sullivan or a Camporelli or an Ashcroft or a Lawler.
He is a laser. Less than ideal. I personally have not normally used the DPP as a significant part to... I just try to pick the best rookies, and I didn't think a DPP rookie was one of the best rookies. With hindsight, it probably wasn't the right call, but maybe a little bit of a lesson to maybe weight that a bit higher in the future. I will say there are a lot of forwards coming back for St Kilda, but we'll maybe get to that in a second. So let's talk some trade targets and who we should be getting into our side. So I think priorities.
Okay.
You must get the must-have rookies. Now, I think there are three, maybe four, absolute must-have rookies. Levi Ashcroft, Xavier Lindsay, I think Lucas Camporelli is in that conversation as well. Camporelli. And Max Hall, which with a question mark. Do you agree with that list? Do you have anyone you want to add to that list as a must-have rookie?
Oh, I think that's probably a decent top four to start. And if you have all those rookies, you're off to the absolute races.
I could also maybe throw Harry Boyd in there, to be fair.
Yeah, and then, I mean, if you're looking to also generate some cash in your defensive line, Luke Traynor looked good, and maybe that's a particular case because he's in defense. So
I didn't put those guys in there because Luke Traynor, Zach Reed, and Jackson Pryor all scored very similar to each other. I kind of see them all having very similar job security. I feel like most of us will have some kind of iteration of at least two of those players.
If you're in
so
a position,
I don't know if you'd have to go out of your way to get the third if you had two of the three.
Fair enough. If you're in a position where you're ready to move on Sam Taylor and you don't need to hold him and you don't have Trainer.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's they're an option, but I don't. So I'm not going to leave them as must-haves is I guess, the point there. Unless you have someone like James Leake or something like that, I think you do need to get rid of that. What are your thoughts? So I think most of them speak for themselves. You don't have Xavier Lindsay. Do you agree with me? Like, is he... and I think a lot of people will have Ashcroft. If you didn't have both Lindsay and Ashcroft, I would, regardless of how much cash it left me with, I would prioritize getting both those players in. Do you think Lindsay is the number one trade target this season, this week, assuming you had Ashcroft?
Yeah, I think he definitely is. I'm, like I said before, I'm going to be in an interesting position because I'd like to have Lindsay and I'd like to get the cash generation going with maybe a haul as well. But also there's that problem of Perryman in particular on field. The cash gen is just not going to go the way that we need it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but we're going to be staring into a buy in a couple of weeks' time, aren't we, as well?
We are. We've got one more round in these buy.
So it's one of those things where does it happen this week? And if I leave it, is someone like Freya, who seems to actually be good when, it, regardless of Dale being back, is he going to get away from me, or is it one that I need to try and pull the trigger on? So I can definitely see some temptation there early days as well.
Talking about Max Hall, he was not someone that I had a lot of hopes going into this round. He was down my order when it came to St. Kilda rookies. I was having a look at the injury list for St. Kilda. I'll read you some of the names. Dan Butler, Liam Henry, Mitch Owens, Cooper Sharman, Max King. There's five names, which are all listed as 1 to 3 weeks away. Sorry, Cooper Sharman is 3 weeks. The rest are 1 to 3 weeks. I would say Dan Butler, Liam Henry, Mitch Owens to a certain degree, even though he's a bit more of a taller forward, but might change their structure a little bit. Is Cooper Sharman, is he a forward? I feel like he is.
Right at this moment, Max Hall's played enough to buy himself at least.
He's got at least a few weeks, but this is me just sort of deciphering whether or not he is in that must-have rookie camp, similar to what like a Dempsey was last year. Is he an Ollie Dempsey type where we should be prioritizing getting him, that he can do this, or not maybe this, but like go 60 to 70 most weeks?
I think the role suggests no, and especially from what we saw in, from St Kilda on the weekend, it wasn't great.
I think it could be encouraging to see that he still scored that well when they got pumped.
I think you've got him in the right spot on the list. So there will be teams that have Ashcroft, they have Lindsay, and who was the
Camporelli.
Last
one? Camporelli.
So you're in that boat. So if you're looking to generate cash from a rookie that's stalled, let's say Hasty doesn't get selected, I think it's a good option to potentially try and go there. But other than that, we're probably talking some mid-prices. So who have you got in your sights?
Well, this is a question. Do you prioritize? Because I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer as a blanket rule, like year on year. I think you got to take each thing as they come. Do you prioritize underpriced premiums who went off versus mid prices? So the type of players I'm talking about are Tom DeConing, Isaac Rankin, Tom Powell, Jai Caldwell. These players are players priced into the 90s, 80s, 90s that have the potential to be keepers for at least the first half of the season. Whereas I would argue in the next bracket, I've got Sam DeConing, Joel Frazier, Mitch Nevitt, Nathan O'Driscoll. I don't see them as keepers. They're kind of, they're purely for cash generation to be moved on eventually. Maybe before, maybe during the buys. Which of that group do you think you prioritize? And is it dependent on what went good or bad in your side?
Yeah, it's always dependent, I think, on what went good and what went bad. I like the idea, if you had a mid-pricer pick that failed, someone in that sort of, you know, 550, 650 range, and you can take them down to the rookie that popped, and that gives you enough cash
to go up to
an underpriced premium. I like the look of that. You're getting in a cash who's getting in a cash cow who's going to generate money for you. And on the other end, you're getting a guy that's already popped that potentially could be a stayer in your team until the buys at the very least.
Mm.
But again, depending on who went poorly in your team, you might not be able to generate that amount of cash. And if that's the case, then you can quite comfortably go across to somebody like a Sam De Koning, who's just popped a massive score. His break even will be right down. Mitch Nevitt is a guy that has given us 100 plus, which means that's going to be in his price cycle for 5 weeks. I don't see there being an issue going to those guys if that's what you can afford.
Yeah, so I just for a lot of these guys in that mid-pricer bracket, I still have some questions, whereas the guys that I mentioned before, I have less questions and I'm more confident. So to me, and Tom De Koning is probably the biggest illustration of that. Like if you were like us and you were someone who started Tim English, but you had a Tim English and like Tristan Sherry, for example, easy. I would have absolutely no issues immediately trading Tim English to Tom De Koning. It might seem reactionary, but I think Tom De Koning has every chance to outscore English. And I think it's a trade that still makes you cash. This strikes me like what I did last year where I did a Brody Grundy to a Tristan Sherry. It's just the option below the player that I had, I'm just so much more confident in. So to me, if you don't have Tom De Koning, I would, after you've got the must-have rookies and at least those top two or three must-have rookies, Tom De Koning to me almost is the next highest priority because I'm just that high on him. But that you might have a different opinion, but I'm really bullish on him. Isaac Rankin, Tom Powell, and Jai Caldwell may be a bit of a different story because they're in lines where you're a bit deeper, especially Jai Caldwell with his buy still to come. But there is something to be said that if you can get a guy who goes 110 for the season while they're priced, especially like a Caldwell, I think he would be sort of mid to high 90s. That's a really good get at this time of the year because I talked to this about DT Lemon. It's that player that doesn't have an expiration date, whereas some of these other guys might. So I'm still going to be working through that in terms of my own head. I might have a bit more of a conclusive sort of priority when it comes to Friday's show, but I know a lot of us will be looking towards the mid-prices. But don't forget about these guys that I think you can be considered as underpriced premiums. It just depends on your level of confidence on what you saw and whether you think that is sustainable.
But to be clear as well, that's for people who are in the luxury position. They don't have the rookies. So just make sure that if you
get the rookies first. I still think you have to have Ashcroft and Lindsay. I think you also probably have to have Camporelli as well. Max Hall, I'm a little bit undecided on. Let's talk about these mid-prices in depth, especially these first three or four names. Sam De Koning. Would you say if you didn't have any of these guys, you think he's the number one guy to get when it comes to the mid-prices who popped? He scored a 124. His break-even is 16. He's already gone up, I want to say, 50K or maybe a bit more, and is now priced at 621.
He looked really good. The role looked good. And the other thing that fills you with confidence is Geelong looked so good.
They dominated.
Frio also looked bad. But I think that at least buys a few weeks before Geelong start to move and play around with that if it does start to go poorly. He, of course, had an easy matchup in terms of ruck, but the thing with Sam De Koning is he's not going to score a heap of points from hit-outs.
Yeah.
And I also don't think he's going to score a heap of points from contested marks down the line. So some of those like key factors that we often think about as making rucks a hard matchup, which is, your Jared Witts, he's not going to give up any hit-outs to you. He's going to not let you take these marks down the line. I don't think they apply as much to Sam De Koning. Am I crazy?
Yeah, no, I don't think you're crazy because Geelong, and credit to Chris Scott, I actually think he's a really good coach. He pisses me off from a fantasy player point of view, but he's a good coach. He does some outside-of-the-box things. Like, it took some teams weeks, maybe longer than it should, for them to figure out what they were doing with players like Tom Stewart. They've got something different going on here with the rucks with, it's almost like he rucks the center bounces, and then like we saw him at times like chipping around the back line. Like he was sort of basically playing as a defender at times. And then you get someone like, why can't I remember the unicorn himself, mid ruck. Who's there?
Blitzovs.
Yeah. Blitzovs. Like he can do multiple different roles. You still got Shannon Neal rucking in the forward line and things like that. So some people might have questions and you can point to the matchup and say this is so far beyond what I would expect that I think you get on, you ask questions later.
One last thing about it, if you want to point to the matchup, well, you just talked about a guy that's playing in the ruck and can chip around with the backs. Who do you reckon he plays this week?
St Kilda. Yeah, and Rowan Marshall looked extremely underdone. I'm not even sure he's going to play this week. He had ice on his knee at the end of that game.
Didn't play ruck anyway.
So, yeah, and he wasn't even the one rucking. It's Harry Boyd. So, and they gave up points anyway last year, even to ruck when Marshall was playing. So I think you get on, you worry about whether or not he's got to trade out later. I think it's still not too late. The next guy here in Joel Frazier, Frazier Crane himself. Now, at halftime, as someone who faded him, I felt vindicated. I thought he's not going to do well with Bailey Dale back on the side, who played well, by the way.
Yep.
He was playing off halfback. The second half moves into the midfield, goes
he had 12
bananas.
CBAs.
Yeah, he had 70 points in the second half after scoring 30 in the first half. What do we read on this? Because there was also some players we expected to be in the CBAs at Bulldogs that were not.
Bevo does some funny things. Riley Sanders, I think, did actually have 14 CBAs, so he was in the CBAs, but we kind of expected them to replace their tight mix that they always have with another version of a tight mix, and it really wasn't the case in the end.
No.
I think Kennedy saw CBAs. Obviously, Libba was probably the most. Sanders saw CBAs, but then, like you said, Frey went in there in the second half and dominated. So it just kind of wasn't what we were expecting. It's not going to happen. Just flat out, when they've got a healthy midfield, I don't think Fraser Crane's going to be in there unless he surpasses Sanders-Kennedy.
They're still 4 to 5 weeks away.
So is this one that you're less confident on and knowing it has an expiry date?
I am less confident on because we saw within the game the difference between his scoring in certain positions. Now, North Melbourne are a harder team to score against the defence than they are in the midfield. So we need to factor that in as well. But I don't know. This is a sentence we could say every season. I don't know what Bevo's thinking. And I don't know if that is something that he just pulled in this game and it was just a one time only, or if this is going to be something we see moving forward. He looked good. He was rucking as well. So he attended 8 ruck contests in that game as well. So, again, it's just a full-on Bevo display. So when you're trusting someone like that, it does make me nervous, which is why I probably have him behind a Sam De Koning if you were choosing between the two. But I still think he's good. His break-even is also not as low as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I just
had a look at
that too.
His break-even's 40. So if he goes a 70, yeah, he might make another 20, 25K, but then it'll slow down really quickly. So you're trading him in expecting him to be 85 to 90, and I'm still not 100% convinced on that because I'm not convinced on what his role is going to be.
So you're thinking that the Perryman, despite being very mild, might hang around for you this week?
Well, he's definitely in the firing line, and we'll get to a segment later where he might appear on, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he leaves my side because I also have a Sam Taylor. And again, that best 18 to me, I can see him being a part of that best 18. He has a break even of 90, which is high, but it's not also, you know, he could reach that. It's not a guaranteed loss of cash. So just something to consider. But I'm a little bit stumped on Frazier and what to do there. The trade of Perryman down to him seems like a no-brainer. But I do see him as someone that has a bit of an expiry date.
Mitch Nevitt, I made some disgusting joke the other week about the Nevitt again list. It was horrible, and he said, you know what, fuck you, Rojo.
Would you, I know there's a position element, could you almost argue that he's a bigger priority to someone like a Frazier?
Geelong's a weird one because when Chris Scott talks, we don't trust him, but when players like this kind of stand up and they do what's required, they play the Geelong system and they're just reliable is what I would have described him as on the weekend. They will back a guy in. So last year, the perfect example is the name is
Dempsey.
Dempsey.
Yep.
So he comes in, doesn't matter his pedigree prior to that. He comes in, he plays the role, he plays it all season, and he's one of their great forwards now. So is never the reincarnation.
The other thing that we saw last year was Max Holmes go from someone who was fringes of the sides and to featuring as a prominent role. Like, could Mitch never be a similar kind of thing, albeit doing it in a different way? Like, he got 11 tackles in this game, started out slowly. I think he only had a very quiet first quarter, but then after that went big. In fact,
never does have a low Blake even. I can't talk tonight.
Low break even.
He does have a low break even. So I actually think he could be more of a priority.
So he's one that's got me thinking. He played lowish TOG, I want to say, and there was a lot of points to go around. So he played 68% time on ground. So you could read that two ways. His points per minute was super high, but is there some doubt on his ability to replicate that? Like, he's not going to average 11 tackles. And
They walked over Frio.
They had, I think, like 1,900 points total as a team, which is far beyond what we'd expect any team to do. Especially this Geelong team has not typically been a high fantasy scoring team. So
trouble I'm having as
like
well
said,
is...
questions here as well.
Yeah, I'm also having trouble. Who would you go to him from? Is
there... Well, Peatling for me is definitely in the firing line.
Okay, so Peatling... I struggle... And again, my team looks shit. Some teams out there must look awesome. But I struggle to see too many people not having enough to do.
I think that would be a more niche area. Yeah, yes. I think there's more things to fix up in the defense than there are in the midfield.
If you're doing that, don't listen to us anymore because you're well beyond where we're at.
Yeah, I think so. What about Nathan O'Driscoll? He actually had the third highest CBAs by a fair margin in this game. He was right up there. Only one fewer CBAs than Caleb Sarong, which surprised me.
I told you, mate, the nod's real.
I know the scoring was less, but I think I'd have... O'Driscoll almost ahead of Nevitt.
I give you picks like Nod. You give me picks like English. What's going on?
English will come good. Don't worry about English, mate. He'll be fine.
That's a Moz if ever I've heard it. Trade him out now. He's
reverse Moz. You don't know what I'm thinking. I liked what I saw. They got pounced, like absolutely smashed. And he still scored 85. So what was he? The fifth, tied fourth highest scoring player for Frio. I almost would say I'd target him over Nevitt. Now, that may be a bit of bias because I obviously started him over Nevitt to begin with, but I did like what I saw him, and the role was even better than I expected.
And I think O'Driscoll's a guy that's going to score even better on a wide ground.
Wide ground and a winning team, too. Yep. Yeah, great. So I'd probably, you know, funnily enough, he might be, you know, right behind Sam DeConing in terms of those mid-price options. Let's talk about some chop suey, chopping some players out of the side.
You don't have the audio, no, so you missed
can't
the chop.
I can't chop.
You missed the chop, yeah, mate. Anyway. So I have to do the chop for
you. Yeah, you got to chop. Where were you?
That was very flat.
Sam Taylor.
Yes.
Let's start here.
Okay.
We both started him.
Yep.
Now, I think the conversation is a bit redundant because you've already made the decision, but was it a flop? Was it a failed pick starting with Sam Taylor? We got $83,000 out of him. His break-even is now 40. He gave us a 47, which we foolishly had on our field.
No, that's not a failed pick.
I don't think it's a failed pick either.
It starts to suck if you're just forced to have him there week after week, but part of the reason we made this pick was because we knew it was going to be best 18, so we just...
He made the most amount of cash in round one out of any player.
Yeah, so that's not a foul pick to me.
I don't think so either.
A position where you've nailed everything else and you get to just move him on, easy peasy lemon squeeze, you get to upgrade him to like a DeConing or something this week, then yeah, it's not even a big upgrade. You're in a good position.
The frustrating thing for me is I would want to have a look at one of the rookie scores on my bench to see if I need him to loop it on.
Yeah.
However, Harry Perryman plays on the Friday night. So if I'm deciding between trading Sam Taylor or Harry Perryman, I need to do that before I have any chance for those rookies to play on my bench. So I'm going to then have to choose a player. Now, it might be a moot point anyway because it's best 18. That D6 might get wiped out of your side as it is. But it does just frustrate me that his red dot or blue dot from a decision-making point of view isn't something that I could factor into the equation. So I think that he... At this stage, I think I would prefer to trade Sam Taylor than I would Harry Perryman.
So he's number one on your chopping block,
yeah.
But most of your high trade targets are rookies that aren't defenders. So,
correct.
And I'm guessing not many people have defender DPP in their utility or anything like that. So is this just one that, okay, you chop Sam Taylor if you have all the rookies and you have all those priorities, but otherwise you need to chop someone else?
Yeah, like if you are someone who are missing a Lindsay and an Ashcroft, then, and you don't have DPP to make Sam Taylor one of those players, you just hold him, I think. You have to prioritize getting those guys in.
Okay.
And he just becomes a loophole option for you, which you need. But yeah, say you only need to get one of those rookies and you have something else to do. Maybe you can go down to one of those rookies from someone else. Maybe it is a Peatling or someone like a Garcia and make enough cash to go Sam Taylor to a De Koning, which is only 10K away, or a Sam Taylor to a Frazier. I think that's a decent move. Maybe it's a complete restructuring. You get him up to someone like a Max Holmes or a Harry Sheezel or an Isaiah Wenginbillera, who all look like the goods this year. But if it's just purely a player you want to trade out, I think Sam Taylor would be the top of my list.
Who else are you chopping up, mate?
Well, his teammate James Leake, I think, also has to go. The reason he's not higher is because he doesn't have as much value on his head. And if you're trading to other rookies, they don't love him quite as much. But he, I mean, we were very against starting him anyway. He's made what? How much cash?
Are you talking about Leake?
Yeah, Leake. Barely any. So I think he has to go. I think that one's a bit self-explanatory. Harry Perriman is third. Chance he hits his break even, but more than likely bleeds cash. And this is where you go, okay, because there's two ways you can look after your cash generation. You can get out players bleeding cash. You can trade in players that are going to make cash. He is of the former. The issue for me is the options around him, and whether or not you'd rather hold a Taylor than a Perryman. I think that the fact that Perryman has the chance to at least help my best 18 score for the week saves him a little bit. But if his cash difference is the difference between getting a trade you like, I would trade Perryman over Taylor if it lands you the option you prefer better. And that's sort of my you've got to balance up who you're trading out, who you're trading in. I think getting in the right players at the moment is almost more important than getting out the stinkers. Because again, it's a one game sample size. They might bounce back.
Fair enough.
Then I have your mate, Tim English.
The issue I'm having with all your chopping block guys is to get the cash cows I need, all of these guys have to stay in my team. Every single player you've called, I've got, and I have to hold them all. It fucking sucks.
Yeah. It's.
I understand the reason.
Because the other rookies, like, they weren't... I mean, Angus Hasey is a rookie that maybe flopped, and if you unfortunately had, like, a Harvey Langford, I'd probably put those guys ahead, but I think there is a bit more obvious. Let's James Leake could be Harvey Langford as a difference name. He probably needs to go first as a sub. But none of the other rookies really flopped. So do you really want to trade I call it a Finn O'Sullivan to a Xavier Lindsay? Like, they play the same role. There's every chance that Lindsay does what Finn O'Sullivan did this week, next week, and Finn O'Sullivan does what Lindsay does this next week as well, and they just flip. So the rookies that didn't go awesome but didn't absolutely shit the bed, like, there's no urgency to trade those guys out. It's more of a restructure, I think, going down from a mid-pricer that failed and getting another guy up.
So you said Tim English on the chopping block. Who to, but?
Well, this is more difficult.
Yep.
Because the guys you'd go up to, and Max Gawn and Tristan Sherry, are playing each other. So I don't love that. If you don't have Tom De Koning, I'm doing that trade 10 times out of 10. Tim English to Tom De Koning. I think that's the easiest trade you'll make all season.
Yep.
Is there anyone else that we could consider? I don't know if there is.
It's gets dirty. You mentioned Jordan Sweet. If you can generate enough cash, could you go with a Toby Nankervis and just hope that he's just going to put Richmond on his shoulders every week? You'd have to generate a little bit of cash to do that. It's about 100K, I think. Well, let me put it this way to you: if I could go, let's say Garcia down to Hall in my forward line, and that would give me enough cash to fix up Tim English. And when I say fix up, I think it would be go to Max or Sherry. I will double check that. But if I would, that would mean missing out on Lindsay. So I could do like Hasty to Lindsay in that scenario. Would you instead ditch Garcia for a Max Hall, knowing that you're playing best 18, and then just bite the bullet? Let me see if I can actually fix it up. I might be absolutely talking out of my ass, which is a feature for me.
Regardless if you can or not, I don't think that is a trade that for most people would be the best use of your trades. And I know he'd look terrible. I didn't like what I saw. So if I had a third trade, look, he'd probably be going for me. He could outscore Tristan Sherry and Max Gawn this week.
If I you're right.
Yeah.
But if he does what he did last week and Gawn and Sherry do what they did, your season's done.
Like, no, it's not done. It's not done. It's not done. Your season's done if you have shit cash generation and you're chasing points early and you're never going to be able to get those upgrades going. I think that is a more danger to your season being over. You might just be fooling yourself to thinking it's not for a little bit longer.
Maybe I'm a bit of a pessimist. The hat I'm wearing doesn't have a 16 on it, so...
Look, I don't like the sight of him in my side at the moment, but I think we've got to give him more than one game. I'm trying to talk myself into the fact he was hot in Melbourne. He doesn't like the heat. Llamas, you know, the bit.
Wasn't it a night game?
He was under the roof. I don't know.
It's probably aircon. Discussion is irrelevant. We're the only two people in the fucking world that own him.
Anyway, he could be replaced for other. I'm not going to name every single player that didn't go well, but other premiums who failed. But he's one that we can obviously relate to. Let's talk about the Saints boys, Angus Hasty and Hugo Garcia.
Garcia was lucky to get to what he did.
He got a 25-point quarter in the last.
He's not a bad player, but his time on ground is so low. And then Hasty being subbed, if there is something that we're not aware of going on there.
I worry those names I read out for St Kilda before when we're talking about Max Hall. I think Garcia is out before Hall. And I'm worried that he might only have 1 or 2 weeks left.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way. I mean... The preseason role was good. The time on ground was always
it was bad there too.
The flag. But yeah, I'm worried too.
I think that he is someone that is a player that could go, but he kind of falls into that bracket where the best 18 kind of might save him. If he's bad on your field and he's named, then you know, you just cross your fingers. He doesn't have to make some cash and his score might drop off. He maybe is a problem in future weeks. But he definitely is someone that is going to become a problem. I don't know if he's an urgent problem right now, although it could come very quickly. Angus Hasty, if he is named again, I want to give him another go. The question to me is more if he's dropped. Do you just fix up that red dot straight away, knowing you probably have to go pay up to whether it is... you know, a Lindsay or a Max Hall as teammates or an Ashcroft if you miss the news. You're going to have to make cash somewhere else to do a little rookie fix-up, which I don't think is the worst thing in the world. But I want to wait. If he's named, I think I'll hold him because I liked what I saw. And I think that the coach made a mistake in subbing him out. I think he was like the 10th worst part of St Kilda that week.
It was very frustrating.
And the players coming in, I don't think are going to affect his position as much as they will Hall's and Garcia's.
What about guys that I think saved their scores a little bit in ways as well? So Riley Sanders was looking very dodgy for a little bit there. You've got James Peatling, who was okay but didn't score, you know, in spurts that we would like to see. What about guys in that kind of price
yeah, range? We can lump Ollie Hollins to this one as well. I think Ollie Hollins is probably I feel the best about him having a bounce back compared to Peatling and Sanders.
It won't be through lack of hard work. He runs hard.
Oh, he was running very hard. So with Sanders, I'm concerned. He was directly impacted by Frazier going into the middle. So he had 10 of his 14 CBAs in the first half when Frazier had 0. And then Frazier got CBAs in the second half and he had 4. 2 in each quarter. He kicked 2 goals to get his 74. So all of them priced very similar. All of them scoring very similar. The options around him in the forward line, I don't know, I'm less confident. I feel like the rookies and the mid-prices, maybe Jack Graham is someone you could point to, but again, the West Coastness of it all has me a little bit worried. I think Peatling rises to the top just because I think there's better options in Nevitt. You could go down to the rookie Lindsay if you miss him and make cash that way. I think a Peatling would trump a Sanders in terms of a trade-out priority, but I think Sanders is also a guy you could cut, especially if you had a forward hiding in your midfield and that was your access to a bit of DPP. That would be... I'd probably, if it was a pure player versus player, I'd probably trade out Sanders versus Peatling first. I think I liked what I saw from Peatling better than I did from Sanders.
Okay.
But I think they both could go. It'd be nice to have a bit of DPP right now, that's for sure.
Fucking did with some iterations my team. I remember Riley Sanders was in my midfield for a bit. I was fucking sitting pretty. And then I said, Mitch, should I just bring in Sherry just to cover off? I should just bring in Sherry. And you said, no, Tim English is going to be fucking gangbusters.
Yeah, well,
I fell for your groovy voodoo.
You also deceived the people and didn't start Bergman.
Deceived the people.
After my advice as well. No, you were going to chop Harry Sheasel and go down to Bergman.
No, I said.
I saved you there.
Safety first. Oh. Give me a spell. We both suck.
Anyway. Yeah, look, not the start we wanted, as it probably is for a lot of people out there. But if you did go really well, capitalize on this. Don't get too comfortable with your high ranking. Like I said, it can change very, very fast, both positively and negatively. I think the key takeaway, prioritize cash gen. Make sure you are getting your structure right over these next few weeks. We will be sitting on these questions for the next few days and giving you some more solidified answers on Friday. But if you want your questions for your team specifically answered, sign up to Patreon at patreon.com/ballboys. We make it a point of pride to go through every single question on our exclusive Q&A podcast. I will be revealing my trade targets with a little bit more detail and a bit more confidence in my order on Patreon as well. And also, you've got a nice round review sitting there already by the one and only Luke Rogerson, mate. A lot of words and time went into that one.
Yeah, lots going on.
Lots going on. So head over to patreon.com/ballboys. Hit the thumbs up, like, subscribe, and we'll see you guys on Friday. Good luck with your trades. Bye.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.